The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to In Search Of. We're your host, Ashton
and Sam.
We're two accountants who binge podcasts by day and TV by night. Keep listening to find what you've been in search of.
Okay. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Ashton.
All right, we have we're going back to our normal scheduled programming. We're doing, I guess we can call it WITSEC or Witness Protection.
WITPRO.
We were inspired by pieces of her on Netflix, which I think that was like my record timing of watching a show. I watched it so fast. I think less than 48 hours. I don't know. Really fast. I spent like a whole Sunday watching it. So we have pieces of her. And then I'm doing a podcast called Relative Unknown. And then you have an episode.
Yeah. Two episodes kind of Criminal.
Okay. I'm excited because I think this is the first time where you haven't listened to my pod. Like, you haven't listened to mine and I haven't listened to yours. Mm-hmm. Usually we're like better about listening to each other's stuff, but we're just trying to survive right now, so
we're trying to get the listener experience and see what it's like when you haven't heard these things and we talk about them.
Yeah, so our lack of being prepared, we're just going to be more excited to hear each other's stories. So we will talk about those three today. Okay, so pieces of her. It has a really famous actress in it.
Toni Collette.
No. Yeah, my mom. Toni something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My mom, I remember, was like, oh my gosh, I love her. Like, I think she's been around a long time. Mm-hmm. So it's got her. I'm trying to think if there's any other, like, big name people
in
it.
The guy, because I remember I texted you. I said, you don't watch Yellowstone, do you? And you said, no.
No,
and
no.
So,
oh, the, yeah.
Oh, what is his name?
He's the older guy,
he's the U.S. Marshal. He is in Yellowstone.
Yellowstone? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I haven't seen that. So pieces of her is on Netflix. I don't know how many episodes there are, but basically
it's like 8 or 10.
Okay. Yeah, so the first episode, I mean, for a long time you're kind of confused, like, what's going on, because you don't know right out of the bat that they're in witness protection, which, you know, if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, but again, why are you even here if you don't want the spoilers? Okay, so the scene starts out, they're at like a mom, I don't know if this is like the initial scene, but in the beginning, a mom and daughter, Toni and her daughter, are eating lunch at some cafe, and there's kind of this like strife between the mom and the daughter. Like, the daughter doesn't fully have her life together. The mom definitely, like, she seems to have her stuff together, but like she's just not happy. Like, you can tell she's not happy. And then I guess another mom and daughter walk in, and they're like talking to each other, and the daughter's like, yeah, I'm at medical school, I'm doing this and this. And the daughter's kind of like, oh great, you know, I'm another person who's better than me or whatever, because they were kind of arguing about, I think at the table, about like she needed to get her life together. And then a guy like sitting like back in the cafe stands up and shoots the mom and daughter, and then starts shooting in the cafe. So you think it's kind of just like a random attack, but I think he was engaged, or like he was engaged to the daughter who had walked up to the table. Isn't that right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the daughter,
they had broken up.
Yeah. And Tony's daughter like works security or something.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, you know, he was shooting up the place, and Tony like yelled to her daughter. She was like, get down. And like Tony covered her. And then the guy mm-hmm. who was shooting was yelling at her like, oh, you can't do your job. Like, you're supposed to be like protecting people, and you're like hiding. Like, your mom is helping you out.
Protecting you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the big thing that they like centered the whole show around was he had a knife, right? He stabbed her
Tony
hand.
Other way around. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, wait. He stabbed her and she had her hand up like this, right?
Yes.
And stuck the knife through her hand. And then she turned her hand around and like slit his throat. So it was pretty like badass, like what she did. But they were like, how do you know how to do that? But they didn't know she was in witness protection. And even her daughter didn't even know she was in witness protection. So then the rest of the show goes on. Like, her mom for a long time, like, continued to not tell her that she was in witness protection. And then the daughter's like slowly starting to learn, like, what. And then they also do like a whole backstory on the mom. And
yeah, like how she came
family.
Into witness protection.
Yeah. Okay. So, oh, sorry, I have a question. So, did you ever watch End of the Effing World on Netflix? It's like a UK mm-hmm. show. Okay, so the younger girl who plays the mom, like, she's kind of got red hair or whatever. I recognized her, and she's from another Netflix show, but she's like a UK-based actress. So I kind of thought that was like a cool little. At first, for the longest time, I was looking at her, and I'm like, "How do I know this person?" And she's in that show, but it's a very dark show. I don't know if many people have seen that, but it's just like one of those UK shows that I like. But go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
Because she was involved when she was younger in a plot to kill her uncle? No.
Or was it her dad?
It was her dad.
Yes, her dad was like kind of involved in like big pharma type stuff.
Yeah, and like there was like a political, not a political, but there was like a convention mm-hmm. that she was at, and she and like her boyfriend at the time were part of this like movement that was like anti big pharma, and mm-hmm. so they were gonna at this convention in some, where was it, in like different country,
I don't know,
they were like gonna remember. Get on stage, and I don't think the original plan was that they were gonna
so the dad was involved in big pharma, and I guess prescribed some kind of medicine, and ultimately a dad who was taking this medicine ends up killing his kids, something like that. Well, the wife of that family was like angry, and so Tony's like older brother and boyfriend at the time were like part of this progressive movement, and they like get in contact with that woman who's lost her husband and kids, and she's like angry and they want to do something. And I think she was not supposed to shoot the dad. She was
right.
I'm not sure exactly what was going to happen, but what they did was they kidnapped a professor, made the wife of whose kids died and husband died like look like her. And later you find out that Tony gives that woman a gun to shoot her dad, and so it like kind of goes off the rails. But there's all these little like stories off of like the main story, so you're kind of I don't know, you're just always like, what is going on? But yeah, there's like a background to her life, there's a background to the, you know, daughter's life, like in real time she's learning her I don't know, there's just for a long time you don't really know what's going on, and then you eventually learn. But it's a really good show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think we've covered all the like stories that they have throughout the series, but there's like too many to even tell, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they have like the story when the brother dies, and mm-hmm. she's like, her whole life, Tony's like running from her ex-boyfriend because he has like a recording or something.
Yeah, he had that thing in the suitcase, which mm-hmm. What was the recording?
I think the thing in this the recording was that the other brother was involved in the crime against the dad, but mm-hmm. he didn't know that the dad was going to get shot.
Right.
So it's kind of like this whole big thing, and then mm-hmm. like at the very end of the show, they're like, the daughter learns that like Tony, her mom, gave the woman the gun, and so it's like she's actually liable, not because she was trying to pin it on the ex-boyfriend the whole time, mm-hmm. so that's why he was coming after her.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yes. Man, it's a crazy show. I forgot how crazy it is.
Yeah, it's good.
It's really good. That's why I watched it so fast. Because I wanted to know.
I watched This Is Not on Theme. But I watched the second season of Starstruck in one night, in like a couple of hours. It's like they're short episodes on HBO Max. It's really cute if you need something light and funny.
Light,
it's very good.
Okay, you know what I've been watching, which is light and funny, is Minx. It's a new series on HBO Max. It's like based in the 70s, and it's this very progressive woman, and she's like wanting to put out a magazine of these, like, you know, just things back in the 70s, like women mm-hmm. having access to birth control and just all mm-hmm. of those types of things. Well, actually the guy from New Girl plays in it. I can't remember which one it is. He's not Schmidt, he's the Winston? Other one. No, not Winston. Nick. Yeah, just run down the list. It's Nick. Yeah. Nick plays in it. And so
yes, I think I've seen an ad for this.
Yeah, it's really cute. I don't want to give too much away if you're like interested in it, but anyways, it's like about a magazine, and it's funny. It's like lighthearted and funny. So I've been watching that, but it's like up to date. So there's new episodes like every Thursday, I think. But okay, back to a darker note, which I do want to point out that I feel like, at least for my story, I don't know about your story, that witness protection definitely is like glamorized. And the more I learned about it, it's mm-hmm. like not what, you know, Hollywood makes it seem mm-hmm. like. That's the perspective I got from my story. I don't know, like, what you got, but I think it was interesting to see, like, a TV show about witness protection and then hear, like, actual
people's
story. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, Pieces of Her is really good if you're wanting, like, a show to binge, and it's not, like, too, like, I feel like not too graphic or anything.
No.
I mean, it's your typical crime, but okay, I'll let you go first on your episodes.
Yeah, and mine is about like the founding of the witness protection.
Oh, program. Okay, so well that's perfect. That so I'm you kind of yeah,
I'll lay the groundwork.
Yeah, well that's good because you're gonna get to tell us like how it got started, mm-hmm. and then I'll kind of tell you of people who were in it like shortly after it was started.
Yeah,
so.
So the episodes are number 104 and 105. They were released in December of 2018. And I can't remember if I listened to them. I don't remember them because when I re-listened to them, it was all seemed new to me. But I found it really interesting. At this point, Yeah, we've listened to so many in like 3.5 years that I don't know. But
yeah,
it's an interview with Gerald Schur, who founded Witness Protection in the 1960s. He's now 86 years old, and he has met with every single person who has entered the program, which I found really interesting.
That is, and I didn't even realize he was still alive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. Well, as of 2018, he was.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So Schur grew up in a, quote, mob-infested part of New York City, and he began following organized crime at a young age. And in the 1960s, he was working for the Department of Justice in organized crime, and he realized that organized crime, aka the mafia, had a secret set of rules that made it like nearly impossible to convict people because they were, you know, sworn to secrecy. They talked in codes. And if anyone was found like breaking this or leaking information, like they were just killed. So he wanted to develop a way for people who would normally be scared out of testifying in these cases to be able to give useful information. So he started it on his own, and he said when he began, he was kind of making it up as he went, which, I mean, I think kind of makes sense because, like, you have this idea, and then once people get into it, like, you're like, oh, I didn't think about that, or I didn't realize that would be a problem. So you kind of have to fix it as more people are in it.
Yeah.
But obviously now it's like very well organized system. So Phoebe asked, like, what are the steps? And he says, well, I mean, the whole interview, he's like, well, there's only a certain amount of information I can give you because, like, the whole point of this is to, like, protect people.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he says, to start off, obviously, first, they have to evaluate whether you're a witness to a serious crime and if you are someone who's worth putting in the witness protection program. So, I mean, are you really in that much danger if you give information? Is the crime serious enough? And then the person or people or family has to be willing to relocate.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, are they willing to relocate? If so, how many people? Are their children involved, or is it just a single person? So once all that information is collected, it goes to it's kind of evaluated, and then it's eventually passed on to U.S. Marshal, who visits the person at their current home and assesses mm-hmm. like the situation. And he says things that they're looking for is like, is there illness? Are there people we have to take care of in that capacity, or yeah. are they just, you know, people that can kind of get what they need from us and like be good? So then the family, once the U.S. Marshal evaluates everything, it's in they're kind of accepted into this program. The family is brought to a secret location in Washington, D.C., and they have like an orientation training type thing. And it's how they should act, how to use their new names. And something I didn't know is that they can keep their first name mm-hmm. and their last initial. And this is obviously, you know, if someone calls out their name, their new fake name, and they like don't respond because they're not used to hearing it, then like that's obviously, you know, a sign that, okay, is that not their name? Or if someone is out and like calls their old real name and they like turn their head, it's like, okay, why are you answering to a different name?
Mm-hmm.
And also like writing checks, it gives them time to think about their signatures because like their first name is the same and then their last initial is the same. So it gives them time to like make sure they switch like the last part of their last name. Mm-hmm. Which I thought, because I think in the show, don't in Pieces of Her, she gets a whole
new name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Actually on my case, they keep their first names. So they do keep their first names, their last names are changed. And also another thing about location, is that they asked like the husband and wife of my mm-hmm. story, if they could be relocated, where they would want to go. So they each listed three places. Well, those were the three places that they knew not to send them to.
Yeah.
So, and again, this was like, my story takes place like in the 80s. So, you know, a lot maybe has changed over the years of like how they do the whole process. Like you said, how it's like kind of ever changing.
Yeah.
But as some of the stuff you're saying does kind of like correlate to, you know, like the first name thing. And I thought the location thing was interesting because it's like, of course, you're going to say where your, like, family and friends are.
You're like, let's go to the beach.
Yeah, or, like, that's what they say, like, where people are like, oh, so-and-so's always wanted to vacation here. Like, let's go find them there kind of thing. So.
Yeah. And they touched on location briefly, and Gerald said that the main consideration is, so there are U.S. Marshals, like, stationed in different parts of the country, but they are only allowed to have a certain number of people that they are protecting. So, like, if they wanted to go to Texas and there's a U.S. Marshal that already has, like, a full group of people that they're working with, and they can't send that person to Texas. So they have to distribute them.
That's kind of how they, like, narrow down the,
yeah.
Okay.
So the Phoebe asks, like, so how do people, you know, because they have no job history and they have no credit history, like, how did people start to get jobs? And he said that in the beginning of the founding of the Witness Protection Program, they got a group of corporations together and they had like a secret meeting where they filled them in on what their program was, and these people agreed to help find work for the people in their program. So I think it has expanded now, but when it started, there was like a small group, and I don't know if all the people worked directly for these corporations or if they like provided references or like things that you need to get like other jobs elsewhere. But I thought that was interesting because Witness Protection will support you for 6 months, like financially, and then you have to find your own work after that. And they also said that members are allowed to leave at any time, and they advise against it, but because not, it says the statistic was that not a single witness who has followed the rules has been harmed or killed after entering Witness Protection. And so the program at the time of the recording has protected 8,600 witnesses and 10,000 of their families. And they gave a couple of stories. And one was in 1972, a guy decided to break the rules of Witness Protection and go check on his old house. And his house had been rigged with a bomb. And so when he opened the front door, it exploded and killed him. And then there was another story of a guy who was in Witness Protection and then ran for political office. I think it was like governor, mayor, something. And he ran in his real name, and he like gave them like a 7-page like rap sheet. And he said, I figure this will come out like if I'm elected, because people dig up dirt on, you know, every official. And he said, I'd rather be a crook on my own terms than be corrupted once I get, I don't know, something like that. And he got like 400 votes or something. So that was more just like a funny story of like,
yeah,
why did you do that?
At least he didn't die.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of all in that episode. So episode 104 is called Witness, and then 105 is called Protection. And so 105 is an episode just on John Franzese. I'm probably saying that wrong.
Whatever.
Yeah. He was the son of a mafia boss, Sonny Franzese.
You're trying really hard.
I really am. I'll just say Sonny F. So he knew that like his dad was like very wealthy, but he didn't know for a long time why. But he realized, I think his brother told him when he was like a teenager, that about like his dad was mafia boss and the whole spiel. Yeah. And so he began working for his dad when he was in his teens in the 1980s, and he would send messages and he would collect and drop off bags of cash. And he eventually became an addict, and he was like in and out of rehab, and he was HIV positive. And an FBI agent came to him and asked if he would be an informant. And he agreed, and he wore a wire for 8 months, which the information collected from that indicted his dad and sent him to prison until he was 100.
Oh my gosh.
He said that he said he did it because he knew that like he was in the wrong world and like he needed to get out, and that was his way out. So he entered witness protection. And his experience is kind of the same as what I just talked about. He got a psychological evaluation, and he was given a new ID and a new name. He said they did make some concessions for him. He asked for Medicare and that he could continue his 12-step meetings wherever he went. He was first relocated to Oklahoma City, and he was given $1,200 a month. Then he was sent to Dallas, and then South Carolina. He was in South Carolina for 2 years, but he was afraid that he had told a close friend too much and he needed to leave. So they moved him to Austin. He was there until 2008. And then he was sent to Indianapolis, where he lives now. And, you know, he lives a very quiet life. I think it said he has like an apartment with a cat, which is just, you know, worlds away from where he was, like being a mafia informant and being his dad's, like, I forget what they call him, but the guy dropping off and picking up cash and all of that. So
yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I don't know what that's called.
Yeah,
I'm not up to date on my.
I thought they were both. What?
I was saying I'm not up to date on my like mob lingo.
Oh, me neither. I need to rewatch Sopranos. But yeah, I thought they were both really interesting. I didn't know the whole that whole history of witness protection. I thought it was so cool that he's met everybody who's come through the
program. Yeah, that is really cool.
And now a word from our sponsors.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And I think it's kind of cool that you told that side of the story, because I feel like I'm going to tell a different side of the story that's kind of like devil's advocate, where I think he, Gerald, has like really good intentions, but I don't think it's always been played out like that, maybe. And also my story is told from someone who's like very angry at, so my story, I'll just kind of get into it. So it's a podcast called Relative Unknown. It's by C13 Original, and it was, it came out in 2020. So the story is told by the daughter of a guy who was in Hell's Angels, which is like a motorcycle gang. Yeah. And so, and I think it's hard on the family because, like, they didn't do anything wrong. They're like, why do I have to be put in this position? Like, this was because of someone else's decision. So I think she has a lot of anger towards, like, her dad's decisions and, like, where she ended up. So she is, she has more of an angry outlook at WITSEC and everything that kind of like happened in her life. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think it's good that you and I are telling two sides of the story, because I think it's good to see like Gerald's like intentions, and then, you know, how it always maybe doesn't play out like Hollywood or how he wants it to. But anyways, so my podcast, it starts off like telling the story of a murder suicide. So in 2013, Paul Dome, which was his WITSEC name, his name was Clarence Crouch, kills his wife and stepson. And the daughter, Jackie Taylor, which her name is actually Jackie Crouch, but her new name was, last name was Taylor. She is given a box of stuff from her father's home, like after he passed away. And in this is, there's a manuscript called Hate and Discontent. And so like he wrote about his whole experience through Hell's Angels and the first part of like his WITSEC stuff. And so she like reads from this throughout the podcast. And then like also in this box, there's patches and letters, or patches from like Hell's Angel patches and letters and pictures and newspaper clippings. So lots of information. So Clarence Crouch, he goes by Butch. A little like about him. I thought this was like interesting. So he's from Shreveport, Louisiana, which is like where I'm basically from, which I didn't even, when I started listening to this, I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't even put two and two together. So his mom, he kind of had like a rough upbringing. His mom was deaf and she did everything she could back in this time. I think this was like the 60s was when he was growing up, 50s or 60s. And so, you know, there's just probably not a lot of resources for people who had children who were deaf. Mm-hmm. And so his father's mom was like, did not think that his mom like could take care of them. So she like had them put in like government care or whatever. So he just had like a rough life, which is not an excuse for anything, but just kind of like explains how people end up in certain situations. So he kind of like a rough timeline. He started off as like a Houston pimp. Then he became the founding member of the Bandidos, which I think was like another gang, and then ended up being like a founding member of the Hells Angels in like the leader in Cleveland. So they're not exactly sure like how he ended up in Cleveland, but that's kind of where his like thing starts in Cleveland. And so they give you like, they tell you a couple stories in the beginning of this podcast about Hells Angels. So there's like one story about the Hells Angels at like a Rolling Stone show where like a fight breaks out, and you can hear like Mick Jagger like asking, like he's like, stop, you know, he's asking the crowd to stop. And I mean, you can go and listen to the show and hear like the whole story of like what happened, but that's not really the whole point of this, you know, overview. But they tell another story of there's like a brawl with another gang in 1971 at a Polish woman's hall. And so this is like the first time Butch kills somebody. And there was just a lot of people stabbed. And then he said it was just like a bloodbath. There's another story they tell, and this is all like gang related activity. There's a family killed, and I think this was payback from the gang that they got in the fight with. They kill one of the Hells Angels families. They put a bomb in a suitcase, and so like a mother ends up getting killed, a 2-year-old and her friend, along with like the gang members. And so it's just trying to like lay out the picture, mm-hmm. of like this was what was going on.
Yeah.
He also, Butch, what ultimately, like, he served time for was he confessed to shooting a kid. He thought he was shooting, like, other gang members, but it ended up just being, like, a 17-year-old kid. So, just a lot of, like, bad stuff happening. He also tells you the story of how to join Hell's Angels, you have to kill someone within 6 months of joining. And if you don't, then you'll be killed. So
why would anyone want to do that?
He said there was like a brotherhood and
okay, but like
I don't know. I think these people, I guess back in this day, were probably just like looking for a community, and I guess that's where they found the community.
Go to the YMCA.
Don't know. But he eventually turns himself into the Witness Protection Plan in 1981. He said he was tired of all of the killing, and that's like what he says, but later his daughter finds out that an agent actually came to one of the club, like in Hell's Angels clubhouse, and passed out business cards. And everyone was laughing because they knew, like, if they ever snitched, they'd be dead. Well, Butch held on to that card, and while he was staying in Shreveport one time with his mom, he decides to call the agent. And I'm kind of, like, skipping timelines, but, like, Butch, he eventually marries this woman, Mary, and they have, like, three kids, and Jackie is the oldest. And so Jackie's kind of telling the story. But he is staying in Shreveport and decides to call the agent, and he was, like, on the outs with the gang and thought they would kill him if he ever went back to Cleveland because he owed them money. So that's kind of like how he says that he did it because he was tired of the killings, but Jackie was like, no, you did it to like save your butt, but whatever. So as part of, and that, like, this is like quoted from the podcast, they said as part of Butch's plea deal, he had agreed to testify in trials and provide information in any way those agencies requested. On March 3rd, 1983, as part of its hearing on organized crime in America, the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee asked Butch to give testimonies about the inner workings of the Hells Angels. So, like, this had never been done before where they had, like, a gang member from the inside come and testify. He was under armed guard and placed behind a curtain to maintain his safety and identity, which I thought, like, she says, like, all you can see is his shoes. Like, they couldn't see him at all. He testified against several Hells Angels, and in the beginning, it was not going well. Of the first, like, four trials, he got 0 out of 4 guilty verdicts. So, like, it was not going good. And then later they learned that the judge was being bribed by the Hells Angels and he was concerned about being reelected. So just kind of tells you like how corrupted everything is. He eventually got a guilty verdict on a Hells Angel who killed his wife, and Butch had like helped with this crime. So like this was like the fifth and only case that he got a guilty verdict on. So I have like a little section on witness protection program, which you kind of covered, but it was said, like, Gerald Schur was the godfather of the WITSEC. It's been operating since the mid-60s, formally established in 1971, and actually had the same, like, numbers. I said 8,600 people have been given new identities, and including almost 10,000 of their family members. So, same numbers. So, this is kind of where, like, my story takes, like, a different outlook. There was a author, professor, and journalist named Bill Mushi. And in 1996, he wrote a series about WITSEC, and he provided a look into the program. And he just talks about how, you know, it's not how Hollywood makes it seem. You're given a new name, social security, and location. And a lot of people were put in rat-infested hotels on months on end. So just, like, not good living. Situations, whatever. They had no identities, so they were like, they struggled to get a job. They didn't have references. And this is some of the things that he talked about with like issues with the program. And then he just was like, you know, I found it difficult for these people to exist. And he said a lot of times they would use the family as leverage against the witness. So, after Butch's family joins witness protection, they're relocated to Billings, Montana. So, like, literally out of the middle of nowhere. They gave the family a stipend until Mary got a job, which is kind of the same thing you had said. Like, I think they had 6 months and then she got a job, and then they were like, okay, you know, no more. Like, you don't get any more. And Jackie, also the daughter, she's just angry because for the family, like, they didn't know what was going on. They had no one there to help them, no one there to provide, like, counseling, therapy, mm-hmm. you know. And again, this was, like, the 80s, so, like, mm-hmm. it's probably a lot different than it is now. But they were just kind of thrown out there. She said the hotel they had to stay in was, like, literally, like, a nasty hotel, like Bill Mushi had described. So it just wasn't a great experience. Yeah, yeah. She just wasn't a great experience. They moved to Billings, Montana. Butch goes to serve time in jail. While Butch is in jail, Jackie's mom divorces him, and she's taken out of the program. So, like, she, like, does not want to be in the program anymore, but the kids continue to stay in it. And at this point, Jackie doesn't see her dad for another 24 years. Her mother was basically, like, for this deal to go forward for Bitch or Butch. It's been a long time. For Butch to go, like, to agree to plea. And they really wanted Butch to, like, go forward with this because, like, mm-hmm. I said, this has never been done. Like, they needed someone to come out and speak on these things because they had a lot of unsolved crime that, like, the Hells Angels were involved in.
Yeah.
So he said, Butch was like, I'm only going to do this if my wife and kids are taken care of. So, mm-hmm. and the mom was like, I don't want anything to do with this guy. Like, she right. knew he was bad. He was trouble. She was like, I don't want anything to go on. Like, I just want to get away from him. Well, yeah. in order for him to plea, they had to agree to this. So, mm-hmm. They told her she was going to be killed unless she joined Butch. And they would receive death threats, like, scaring them into joining. And Bill Mushi was, like, basically, like, saying that danger is manufactured to keep them in line. So, like, if they want the witness to do what they want, they're going to, like, manipulate the family, you know, as leverage.
Yeah.
And they even said, like, they had a Hell's Angel who knew Butch back in the day, and he was like, you know, the Hell's Angels told the family they wouldn't hurt Mary and the kids. They only wanted Butch. They were like, we don't want anything to do. So, again, just a different perspective. Jackie also talks about her life, like, after they went to Montana, and she just said, like, her mom got really abusive, and I think it was just because her mom was angry, you know, like, they were uprooted. And she also said, like, maybe her mom resented her because she reminded her of her dad. She said she was bullied when they first moved to Montana. And then eventually she just, like, turned the tables on anyone who had ever bullied her. She just had a lot of rage, you know? So there's just a lot of things that are just not, again, it was the 80s, you know? Mm-hmm. So she starts doing drugs. She was like, I don't care anymore. She eventually went to a hospital for teens, and she was in therapy at the hospital, and she thought, like, okay, I'm finally going to be able to talk about, like, everything I'd been through. Well, the therapist didn't believe her. So they made her take more tests, and so it was just, like, they thought she was crazy. So her mom, when she's 15, like, signs her over to the state because she's, like, her mom, like, just doesn't know what to do with her anymore. She ends up in a group home for girls, and then when Jackie is 16, her father is released from prison. And so in 2006, Jackie goes back to Louisiana to see her dad's sister. She wanted to find out where her dad was. And she was like, you know, I wanted to kill him. Like, I was angry at everything, like, he had done and put us in this position. And so when she sees her dad, he was living, I think, somewhere in Texas, like an hour and a half from Shreveport. I can't remember where they said, but she's like, you know, this crippled old man living in the middle of nowhere, like, comes out, and she's like, all the hate went away because she was like, he was just my dad, and she hadn't seen him in so long. Mm-hmm. And so she tells a story where they go to a grocery store, and he, like, writes a check to, like, pay for the groceries, and he has to show his ID, and it's the identity that they gave him, like, 20 years ago. And the clerk, like, laughs and makes a joke asking if it's really him. And Jackie's like, you know, I just realized, like, how my dad's had to live in hiding for so long. Mm-hmm. So in 2010, Jackie like gets fed up with the WITSEC program, and she says years after having issues like proving her identity. So she kind of explained, she's like, they take your birth certificate, you're never issued a new one. She had issues getting into elementary school, proving who she was when placed in foster care, couldn't get a driver's license, couldn't get a passport. She got her GED and then tried to get into college, but the admin board didn't believe who she said she was. So she had issues getting her marriage license. So each of these times she said she had to have someone vouch for her, and also had to like out herself saying she was in WITSEC every single time. Mm-hmm. So one day she got a letter saying that her children's medical coverage had been denied because she couldn't prove that she was a U.S. citizen. And so she was like, once it started affecting my kids, she's like, I just snapped and went to the press. There was an article published, and she said the government finally started to listen. So she's like, you basically have to like go start talking for them to be like, okay. So Jackie, last saw her dad. After the last time she saw her dad, they emailed back and forth when stay in touch. And then the last time she heard from him was in 2012. This year, he had emailed the Social Security Administration trying to get disability because he had suffered stab wounds from that brawl that I mentioned earlier at the Polish Women Hall. And so he was in constant pain and could hardly walk. And she said he struggled to get any help from the government like they promised him years ago. And she said he sent a letter to the U.S. Marshals while waiting a response from the Social Security office to request medical records. And she's like, you know, I realized that like he was a monster and he did all these bad things, but she's like, regardless of that, like the U.S. government still like made him a promise to take care of him.
Yeah.
And so again, he was denied, and because he couldn't provide enough personal information. So in 2013, he filed a Freedom of Information Act request asking for medical records. Again, no response. And then she also found like a bank statement that showed he had like $50 in his bank account. So she was like, you know, with no disability insurance, no money to cover his medical costs, like he just saw no way out. So that's where it takes you back to the beginning of the podcast, where he kills his wife and stepson. And it says like he had to shoot them twice, I guess, because they didn't die at first. And then he stayed in the house with them for 3 days. And then once it started to smell, he let the dog out, set the house on fire, and shot himself. So it's just like a really sad story. But it just kind of tells you, I guess, the other side of like where things can go wrong.
The criminal podcasts like briefly say like, oh, you know, you have to leave your family, and you know, that's kind of sad. And then the John F said that, like, you know, when his dad got out of prison, they have had no contact, and like his family is mad at him for like turning against the dad, but like it doesn't play out these scenarios like yours does in how people are left out on their own and how it can derail so horribly.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, like anything with the government is such a pain in the butt. Like,
having
to go get your tags renewed, having to just do anything like that. Like, when you move states, like I remember when I moved from Louisiana to Tennessee, like having to get a new driver's license, having to do all that stuff. Like, that's a pain. And I'm nobody. Like, you know, like, so it's like, it's just, it's crazy. I think this podcast does a good, or ours, I'm bragging on ourselves. I think we do a good job of like showing, like I said earlier, the Hollywood version that is portrayed, which that's always how I thought it was.
Yeah. But even that, I mean, not in the ways that you've talked about, but like the mother and daughter definitely had tension because they were always moving. The daughter was like, what is going on? Like, we have such a disconnect here, and you can never tell me the truth.
No, you're right. And you know, and maybe the Hollywood version doesn't show you the, like, the teeny tiny things that you don't even think about, like disabilities, that kind of thing.
And like they were living in nice enough, you know,
houses,
conditions, and
but and then your podcast does the, you know, I really do think Gerald Schur, like even Bill Mushi said, like I think he really, you know, meant well with this program, but
it's grown. Right. And it's hard to play out every possible scenario and every way it could go bad. And it's like, well, I don't know that we can come up with a solution to every possible thing that could go wrong. But when they go wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong and wrong, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I just realized that I'm frozen on the screen. Am I frozen to you?
You're moving.
Oh, I'm frozen to me. Anyways, we're doing this virtually if you haven't noticed yet. We'll see how this sounds after the fact. But.
And then the other, which I just realized, and I told you that the new season of Something Was Wrong, which we've talked about before, is witness protection. Or the guy says he's in witness protection. I think it's only one episode is out.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what that story.
Yeah.
I've only listened to the first episode. Have you listened to it yet?
Yeah, I think only the first one is out.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah, I'm curious to see the second. But yeah, so check out those podcasts. Check out Something Was Wrong. I'm on her new season. I'm very intrigued. I feel like, you know, every time we start thinking of a topic, there's kind of something else going on. So it's exciting to kind of dive into, like, Something Was Wrong and see, like, where her story goes.
Yeah.
So anyways, well, I was good. I have gamer headphones on, and I've had my notes covering my face. I've only seen Sam's face, and now I've put my notes down and I'm looking at myself again. So I just feel bad that Sam's had to look at me like this for the past
hour. You had to look at me. I look like
it's been one of those weeks, but we did it. We're here, and we brought some more content.
Season two, we're back and better than ever.
We are. All right. Well, I think that's all I got. That's all she wrote. Like I said last time.
That'll be your signature tagline.
I know. And then I'll get sued by somebody because that's probably from like a...
Yeah, Tia.
Like you, yeah. Yeah. All right. Bye, Sam.
Bye, Ashton.
Thanks for listening to In Search Of. Don't forget to review, subscribe, and follow our podcast to stay up to date on the latest episodes.
If you want more information on In Search Of, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.